For African people, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization. And they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us, so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors, because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization, and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour a libation to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continue to improve, continue to evolve. And at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent. Leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe, pour libation to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diasporas, both objects of a global myopia that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because over time they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that described them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation too to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation. Those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation. Ashe. Pour libation to our children and those yet to be born. For they are the ones that you must teach. And you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity. For they will call your name in all eternity. To our children we pour libation. Ashe. Ashe. Asheo.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Can I ask you a question?
What the hell you want to ask me? Mrs. Stawicki is the one you got the questions for.
How come you ain't never liked me?
Liked you? Who in the hell ever said, I got to like you? What law is there to say, I got to like you? Do you want to stand up in my face and ask me some damn fool-ass question like that? Talk about liking somebody. Come here, boy, when I talk to you. Straighten up, goddammit. Ask you a question. What law is there to say I got to like you?
None.
All right, then. Don't you eat every day? Answer me when I talk to you. Don't you eat every day?
Yeah.
Nigga, as long as you live in my house, you put a sir on the end of it when you talk to me.
Yes, sir.
You eat every day.
Yes, sir.
Got a roof over your head.
Yes, sir.
And clothes on your back.
Yes, sir.
Why you think that is?
Because of you.
Hell, I know it's because of me. Why do you think that is?
Because you like me?
Like you. I go out of here every morning and bust my butt putting up with them crackers all day long because I like you. You is the biggest fool I ever saw. It is my job. It is my responsibility. You understand that? A man got to take care of his family. You live in my house. You sleep your behind on my bedclothes. You put my food in your belly because you are my son. You are my flesh and blood, not because I like you. It is my duty to take care of you. I owe a responsibility to you. Wait now. Let's get this straight right now. But go along any further. I ain't got to like you. Mr. Rand, don't give me my money come payday because he liked me. He give me because he owe me. Now, I didn't give you everything I had to give you. I gave you your life. Your mama and me worked it out between us. And liking your black ass was not a part of the bargain. And don't you try and go through life worried if somebody like you or not. You best make sure that they are doing right by you. You understand what I'm saying, boy?
Yes, sir.
Then you get the hell out of my face and go on down another A&P.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings, my sisters and brothers. Welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank Thursday edition. We are calling our program tonight the Black Reality Think Tank Coffee Shop Discussion. A very dynamic idea that we want to begin to introduce to our programs. Thursday night was normally allocated to another brother who has decided to do something different. But we are going to continue with our Thursday production. We want to make sure that we continue to do the same things that we're doing on Tuesday. So tonight we are having a coffee shop conversation with many of our wonderful listeners that are always a part of our program. We appreciate them so much. They've all agreed to come on and talk with us and, you know, just kind of share their ideas. And what we want to talk about tonight, we're going to talk about some of this imagery stuff that we see and face with every day. Because of the COVID-19, a lot of us are at home and we're relaxing and we're chilling and we're watching Netflix, we're watching Prime, we're watching HBO, Showtime, and they are throwing a plethora of movies at us in relationship to African-American people and African-American culture. So the point that I'm wanting to ask tonight, is this healthy for us? Are these ideas and things that obviously we want to embrace? Now, don't get me wrong. Entertainment is entertainment. And a lot of times it not always has to meet some moral standard. But still, I think there are subtle messages that are sometimes coming at you through all of this. So that's what we want to talk about tonight. And I've asked some of our real good friends, our best friends that we have, that are part of the Black Reality Think Tank to come forward. Already we have Sister Dee Dee out of Milwaukee. She's on. Brother Timothy out of Philadelphia is on. Sister Ayan out of Greensboro is on. Brother Lush out of Montgomery. So we're going to have a real good time tonight. Just have a little fun at it as well. Because, again, this motion pictures, music, and those kinds of things are entertaining, and we just supposed to use that to relax. But my thoughts are is that it's also a part of the conditioning of things, and a lot of times our young people are watching it, and we want to kind of know what all of that means. And so that's what we're going to do tonight. As I said, normally this Thursday night hour was allocated to another program that's no longer on anymore, and we are going to be filling this slot very soon. Next week, while I have your attention, next week, we're going to come from the motherland. We're going to come out of, straight out of Africa. So this program comes on at 6. It'll be 12 o'clock midnight there. But we have a young sister who was formerly from the States that now lives in the Cameroon. She was on once before on one of the Saturday programs. And she's going to come on. And she's pushing the idea. She was a part of the director of the Chamber of Commerce out of the Cameroon. And she wants to kind of reach out to businesses and individuals here in America that would like to do businesses with Africa. And so what she's going to do is bring some of the friends and people that she knows on as guests, and then obviously those of us who are here in the States will be able to sort of dialogue a little bit about what are the possibilities, what is it that we can do to, if we want to decide to have a commercial relationship with the mother country. And so that's what she's going to be talking about. I've been discussing this with her now for the last 2 or 3 months, and we're finally finding a way to do it. So she's going to come on next Thursday, 6 o'clock, 12 o'clock in the Cameroon. She's going to talk about a lot of what we have mentioned. So please, by all means, join in and see what ideas that we can get together. So, yes, this is the Black Reality Think Tank Coffee Shop Talk. And we're going to talk tonight about imagery, movies, television programs, all of this stuff that's coming at us all the time. So, as always, in all of our programs, we like to do ancestral recognition. We've been doing that on all of our programs. And tonight I want to pay tribute to one of our great ancestors that sort of speaks to what we're going to be talking about. And I did him once before, but I thought maybe it'd be real relevant to do him again, because he is definitely one of my heroes. And his name is Spencer Williams. Spencer Williams is widely named for his portrayal of the character Andy in the controversial 1950s television comedy series called Amos and Andy. His contribution to the world of film and television, however, far surpassed the limitations of the popular but widely criticized Amos and Andy sitcom. He was born July 14, 1893, in Vidalia, Louisiana. Williams moved to New York City during his teens, and he studied comedy under vaudeville comedian Burt Williams. He attended the University of Minnesota, but he interrupted his studies to serve several years in the United States Army during and after World War I. After being honorably discharged from the service in 1923, Williams returned to New York City and concentrated on a career in show business. He eventually landed a job with Christie Studios in Hollywood, where he co-wrote and appeared in Paramount Pictures' first all-black talking film, Melancholy Dame, in 1928. He was subsequently retained as a consultant, continuity writer, and performer for the Christie Comedies, a comedy series that focused on black life in urban Alabama. And I don't know if you've ever seen a clipping of it. It's rough. But it, nevertheless, that was in that time frame. By 1940, Spencer Williams wrote the script and portrayed a detective in the film Song of Engaging. It was a follow-up version. Check this out now. It was a follow-up version of the King Kong clone Ignatie. King Kong clone Ignatie. The following year, his own company, Amigo Films, produced a movie called The Blood of Jesus. It was a religious fantasy that concentrates on moral issues and religious themes. The Blood of Jesus is considered one of the most effective depictions of black life, and particularly black church life in the South, and was selected by the United States Congress for entry into the National Registry of Films in 1991. In addition to his directing and writing, Williams appeared in nearly 20 films, and he also composed music. In 1951, he was selected to appear as the lead character Andy on the Amos and Andy show, and also occasionally contribute to writing Amos and Andy scripts. Although he is best remembered for his role as the slow-witted, often duped, and frequently unemployed Andy, Williams later protested the demeaning public images in which Hollywood subjected blacks to portray. He pressed for more serious depictions of blacks in motion pictures. and attempted to rectify the stereotypical climate by making movies himself after the Amos and Andy series had gone off. And they were more in line this time with African-American life. Spencer Williams died of kidney failure in his Los Angeles home on December the 13th, 1969. Spencer Williams, Andy Brown. And that's kind of where we are going tonight with this conversation. It's the kind of thing we want to talk about. We want to talk about the depiction of African-American life by Hollywood. Sometimes our own people are writing it, doing it. Sometimes there are others that do the depiction. But to me, one of the greatest filmmakers of all time is the brother, my dear brother, Spike Lee. I think nobody has done justice to producing films that really look at black life in the way Spike Lee. But that's another story. We're going to talk about that in a future coming up program where we look at the work of Spike Lee. And if I'm blessed and somehow or the other I live right and the good Lord and the ancestors answer my prayers, then we will have Brother Spike Lee as a guest as well on that program. But no promises yet. Got to work on it. So I got somebody that's going to work with me on getting Brother Spike to come on and talk about what he was trying to do with his many films. Okay, so tonight, let me just quickly give you the format of what we want to do. It's open. All of the lines will be open. You can come in at any time you want to and talk. I'm going to throw out some ideas, and I'm going to ask you, what are your opinions and what are your thoughts on it? You know, you can differ, you can agree. You know, it's nothing. It's open. This is coffee shop talk. We're in the coffee shop right now drinking our coffee, and we just want to talk because we are brothers and sisters and have known each other over many, many months and kind of know where everybody's ideas are from. And since COVID doesn't allow us to get together physically, I said, well, let me use this platform to do some of the things like this. And we'll be doing others on this kind of format where we just open up and talk about stuff. And so you're welcome to do that tonight, even though we're going to talk about motion pictures and a lot of the imagery that we see on television. We can also throw some other stuff out there. And I do have some other things that I want to talk about. So that's kind of why I opened up with the Andy Brown, Amos and Andy. So here we go. I'm going to throw out there. Is there anybody out there that objected of our panel to Amos and Andy during the year? Did you watch that? Did you listen to it? Did you understand it? Did you disagree with it? What are some of the clutches that some of you that may have? And like I said, I got Brother Didi, Sister Didi online. I've got Brother Timothy online. I've got Sister Yon online. And I've got Brother Lush. And I have somebody else, but it's an unknown caller. So I'm not quite sure what it is. But you're welcome to chime into this conversation as well. So let me throw out there, Amos and Andy, good or bad?
Dr. Rogers, I guess it depends, and I'm saying that if you don't think I'm being too aggressive, I just happen to come first. I don't like the image. One thing you mentioned, Spike Lee, who's a very intellectual and understanding filmmaker.
Yes, sir.
See,
he was.
And he understood, yes, he understood. If you ever see his film Bamboozled,
yep,
he talks about the performing and the images of actors. But Dr. Rogers, they tell me that Amos Andy did this, Spencer Williams. He later talked about how he felt about that role, to say that I did this, it was economically feasible, I was able to feed my family, and I did it so you folks don't have to do it. I think that was the message. Now, but Dr. Rogers, we don't stop it. We continue on with buffoonery. So that's just my opinion, and
that's what we want. We just want your opinion.
My opinion. So was he wrong? I mean, that's an opinion. And what I think is the end justifies the mean. What was his message, and what was he trying to do, and what did he want to see in the future?
Right.
That's the end of my
sentence. Because very clearly, Spencer Williams in that role in Amos and Andy also. Wrote some of the script, and if you ever seen and knew some of the script that he wrote, it was a lot different, because the original role was played by two white men, And that's where it started. And they were making jokes about, you know, the way Black life was. And even to the point, it's so interesting that the sponsors of the Amos and Andy show that was on national television were people like Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer and some of those other corporations of that ilk. They were the ones that were paying for that. Very ugly kind of behavior and stuff like that. But anyway, that was the deal. Anybody else thoughts on Amos and Andy before we get into some of the other talk?
Doc Rogers,
yes,
good evening, everyone. To honestly tell you the truth, I think it was the funniest thing. The side cracking kind of comedy, and, you know, couple that with Three Stooges. Mm-hmm. And back then, I was being young and energetic and just loving life because of the laughter that it brought. Mm-hmm. Later on, as I started to mature a little bit, right, and also taking on some of those characters, the kind of fool around in school or fool around in the neighborhood a little bit, I didn't think about the black-whiteness of it at all. Mm-hmm. I really didn't. I was thinking about the funniness through it all. And so later on, and admittedly so, I haven't been on TV very much to watch anything. I don't even know if it's – I could go on YouTube and find some things that would just crack me up, right? Yes. I mean, it really would.
Yes.
And so for me, it was my time to laugh. It was my time to enjoy life and just crack up, man.
Right, right. That's it. Because, you know, clearly some – okay, go right ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay. You know what? I like what that first brother had said also. Oh, I apologize.
Brother
good
Timothy.
Evening, family. So good to be with you all.
Uh-huh.
But, Rogers, I thought about what the other that first gentleman said. It was, I really like what he said because, you know what, it made me think about Stephen Fetchin. Because
mm-hmm.
I had looked at, I watched his biography, and I also watched, was that Bojangles Robinson?
Uh-huh. Yeah, Bojangles.
I watched his biography.
Right.
He didn't allow, you know, he turned down a lot of roles and didn't allow them, I guess, in too many movies, you did not see him, you know, playing the dummy.
Right.
But I think after a while, Stephen Fetchin really got kind of upset with it, too. And he was, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think a lot of people think, you know, he was just a dumb end. But he was pretty smart,
mm-hmm.
although he died broke. And then another thing, too, I think what made us laugh at Amos and Andy or a lot of that, because I remember my mother talking about that, you know, about how they used to watch that. But I feel like the only reason, like, we laughed at stuff like that because we didn't know our culture and we didn't know nothing about us.
Good point.
Because
good point.
I think if we had even at an early age or whatever, it probably wouldn't have been that funny to us if we knew what white folks was always doing to us. You know, as long as we was bucking our eyes and tap dancing and doing the buffoonery, you know, that was okay. You know, and then with them, you know, painting their faces black, you know, just the whole scenario thing of that. If we had a new then, you know, I don't think it would have been that funny.
I agree.
I mean, you know, nothing against what Brother Lush said, because I love Brother Lush. But, I'm just saying if we had a new, you know, because I used to laugh at Abbott and Costello, too. I mean, man, that was some of my favorites, Abbott and Costello and Me, Frankenstein, and Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, wow. But as Brother Lush said also, once we start to mature, you know, after a while, we'll be like,
Right, right. You know, it's interesting, too. Brother Timothy said something else, that a lot of times they were individuals because that was the only way of a means of making income. And I mean, I know you could even dispute that as not, that's, you know, you selling yourself short by doing that. But I think about Burt Williams. And Burt Williams was one of the richest black men in America during the time he was playing the buffoonery and the minstrel shows. He used to play with the Ziegfeld Follies. And he would blacken his already black face and widen his lips and get out there and do that this, but he also was very social minded in terms of the community, what he made with his money. Burt Williams did a lot. There's a good book written by a guy named Bob Bogle. I think it's named Bogle about the Mammies, the Coons, and all of that. these were ways because whites didn't want us in anything else. So we had to play those roles. Hattie McDaniel had to play the mammy because you couldn't do anything else, you know, but play the mammy.
Yeah.
So I think we got to take some of that in consideration for back then. Right, back then, you know, that's exactly right. And so, brother,
can I say something, Dr. Rogers, if you don't mind?
Yeah, go right in. This is a free open
I'm going to say this, Dr. Rogers. If we take Spencer Williams today and we take, not too long ago, a Richard Pryor. Richard Pryor was able to do more than Spencer. Richard Pryor, because, you know, Richard Pryor and Gil Scott-Heron became very good friends.
Right.
Anybody who would hang out with Gil Scott-Heron, other than his habit with drugs, he was a brilliant mind, right, just like Richard Pryor. But Richard Pryor had a way of giving you comedy and talking about white folks in a way that nobody could talk about them.
Right.
Now, he was a genius. He was a genius. But see, I think Spencer said, look, if we want to take this further, let's be like a Richard Pryor. And here's the thing. Mm-hmm. What Richard Pryor did is something to a person that I didn't think was that funny. He was able to get a Bill Cosby. Now, you see the money that Bill Cosby amassed?
Right.
And I'm going to say it. I don't like what's going on with Bill Cosby. Now, unfortunately, he's incarcerated. I wasn't with him when those crimes took place. But Bill Cosby, as I Spy, see, we were able to get in different roles then. He was able to get on television, right? He was able to get Stanford and Son and things of that nature. It got better and better. Mm-hmm. But Dr. Rogers, and he even, Bill Cosby understood the marketing of television,
right,
like Oprah does. But here's the other part. My other thing is that in the midst of this, you got to be morally correct in order to bring your point across. But you can't get out of here and make junk. See, that's what I like about Spike Lee. Spike Lee stuff can be so critiqued. You can see all the stuff right on the shelf. We have to, like, Du Bois had an essay on what is the criteria of the Negro. How and what will he sell out on, or will he make his art to perfection?
Exactly.
See, that's perfect. You want your art to be, you want people to look at your art as they look at you.
That's a good point. I like that. I really like that. Because that's exactly correct. And no doubt about it, when we look back at those scenes and at those roles during those times, a lot of times they depicted some of what life was really like. But do you want to be reminded of that, you know, in that way? Do you want to not deal with it or sweep it under the rug? I think those are some of the questions that come up. I mean, very clearly, I knew people like Amos and Andy. I knew some Andy Browns. I know, personally know some Andy Browns, character types. But so do what we're going to do, sweep that under the rug and not talk about that. But very clearly, some of those other characters we saw, now I didn't know any Burt Williams. I didn't know any, you know, the minstrel type thing. I didn't understand that. But very clearly, when as Hollywood is developing and blacks are becoming to come to the stage, it becomes important to look at what that, because those are images that people take and borrow. So now with that, what we just said about Amos and Andy. And again, I just want to say again, this is Freeform. We've got all of our friends that are on just right now. There's some that haven't got on yet, but will be joining us. We've got Sister Dee Dee is on, Brother Timothy is on, Sister Yan, Brother Lush, and I just noticed Brother Herbie White has just joined us. So we're going to be opening up. Just come in whenever you feel. So, with all we've said about Amos and Andy, we started off with Amos and Andy because I did Spencer Williams as an ancestral profile. So, 2021, going forward, what the hell was Eddie Murphy thinking about in Coming to America 2? Now, anybody that has seen it, you can obviously please respond. If you haven't seen it yet, then obviously you can't respond. And then I might just add a little commentary here. Did anybody see Netflix's, what actually wasn't Netflix, it's Amazon Prime, Coming to America 2. What do you think? So nobody on?
Dr. Rogers, I can't comment. I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. All right.
And I really can't comment. And I'm really trying to think of Coming to America Part 1.
Exactly.
Right?
I've
just
thing?
Been so far back in my mind in that. So I really can't comment on that.
Okay. Anybody that's on now, see it's just a Dee Dee, Brother Timothy?
No, I haven't. And I don't plan on watching.
Okay.
I haven't seen it, but I'll tell you something. I saw the one, A Night in Miami.
No, let me stay with this first. We're gonna move around. Okay, move around. We'll come to that one. But I want to deal with Coming to America 2. Eddie Murphy, Arsenio Hall, a whole bunch of people in it. I mean, all kind of folks was in that movie. Top. But again, this was done by Eddie Murphy. It was produced by Eddie Murphy. Well, I'm not going to tant your view of it, because I know if you do want to see it. But it would be an excellent movie to compare and contrast with the Amos and Andy Step and Fetch It movies of the old days. This is my perspective, again. And if there's anybody that feels different that's on the internet now, this is a call-in format. You can call us at 215-490-9832, and you can give your input at any point in time. But very clearly, I have a different perspective of that movie. Even, as you said, one wasn't all that, but I think two is just, I'm just going to let you see it. And you were informed, and maybe another time we can come back and can kind of talk about that. I started to watch it, you know, because Eddie Murphy, black movie, has nothing to do whatsoever with Africa, nothing. But anyway, they did show it, so I'm going to go any further and just kind of back up and let that, so maybe you might want to see it. Okay, now, coming, to, you said, Brother Timothy, I'm going to mention that one. You mentioned the fact that One Night in Miami, and that was on, that came on, I think, Amazon as well. And like I said, all these streaming services are trying to get our attention in some way, obviously to get you to buy their product. And Netflix keeps going up in price. I remember when I used to watch Netflix about a year ago, it was $9. Now it's like $14, $15.
Mm-hmm.
Keep going up and up and up. So, but anyway, they're trying to get your attention and get you to compete. And they're competing against stuff like HBO Max. They're competing against Prime. They're competing against Hulu and all of these different streaming networks that are out there like that. So, with that, go ahead, Brother Timothy. What about One Night in Miami?
Well,
what did you like about
Dr. Rogers, I saw it. My queen, she pulled it up. She's the reason why I saw it. And anytime I see things on Malcolm X and Muhammad Ali, I don't even include Jim Brown in anything that I like. I don't particularly like him anymore,
okay,
which I think you can understand.
All right. Okay.
And anytime I see people like Sam Cooke, I'm interested because I like the documentaries on him better, because when they're in movies, people stray away from the group of the men because of their greatness and their character. But I'm going to get to my point. Yeah, when you see a person like Malcolm X and Muhammad Ali, I'm reading a book by Jeremiah Sabbath called The Top of the Clock.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Philadelphia minister in Philadelphia. He was the head chief minister under Elijah Muhammad. And if you read his autobiographical work, he talks about the time and work that Elijah Muhammad put in him, Malcolm X, Farrakhan, and Muhammad Ali. So when I had and saw this woman who I guess produced and wrote this, she takes away totally from the characters that you and I know from reading and documentary.
Mm-hmm.
She has Malcolm X, I would say, crying and very submissive in his mannerism. We know that's not Malcolm.
Mm-hmm.
She had Ali, very confrontational with Sam Cooke. Sam Cooke telling Malcolm that, and Malcolm telling Sam Cooke that you aren't singing and making the right things. I can't believe that a woman, now we have a stage for Hollywood. Spencer Williams has said, did this for you so you wouldn't do what you're doing. Spencer Williams would turn around in his grave and say, you should be at the point now, you're producing, you're writing, you have the stage, and you're making clowns out of characters.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was terrible.
Right, I got you. Okay, but now someone would probably respond to you and say, but it's only a fiction. It's a fiction piece. It's just trying to kind of attempting to entertain you. They weren't necessarily trying to depict it as real. It was fiction. So how would you respond to that? How would you?
Well, Spike Lee would say, well, that's the reason why I take the position I do on film, because he said that Spike Lee would say to you, I believe that the power of film and the power of the image, especially the black man and black woman's image,
right,
is supposed to be on a level where there's some type of demeanor, decorum, character, a message. You know what I'm saying? If it is a tragedy, you know, I study tragedy in education, I mean, when it came to undergrad and grad, and you had this character who goes through these, I forgot how the dynamic character, whatever there was, the character is supposed to be a lesson in the story. And the thing is that you're not supposed to make the mistakes. The whole thing is, they have a quote in the Quran called the Mudawasa. You learn from people's examples, so you won't have the same experience of failure.
Okay.
That's my point.
Okay, I got you. All right. So so then you would obviously respond, as you said, using the that image, that, you know, fiction still needs to look at some form of, reality and dealing with that. And I agree, Malcolm's role was not quite the strength and power that we knew him as, based on not only just his book and writing, but other depictions of him. Spike Lee, did some justice. There were complaints, though. Spike didn't even handle Malcolm right. You know, he said he spent too much time on his pimping role and his role when he was living in Boston, dealing with white women. They put too much time on that and not enough on, some of his work as it came in the Nation of Islam. But again, I don't think that tainted his image, because we all had a sense of knowing who he was and what he meant. But I do understand where you're going with that. Well, then what about Fred Hampton, Black Messiah? Is that what do you think? Is that portrayed correctly, you think? Anybody?
I haven't seen it, but I know his son has something to do with the movie. That might make a difference, but I can't wait to see that movie.
Anybody that's on now? Did you see
it? I haven't seen it either.
Okay. Brother Les, you seen Fred Hampton? Fred Hampton?
No, I haven't seen that yet either.
Okay. What about you, Sister Jan? You seen Fred Hampton?
No. Hold on 1 second, please. First of all, greetings, brothers and sisters. How's everybody?
Right.
Hey, good evening.
All right. No, I haven't seen any of them.
Okay. All right. Let me
share why. Okay. There's something in my spirit that's telling me, that's just not wanting to engage in what's in film right now.
Right.
Because I see another aspect of it that I want to talk about a little later.
Okay, good.
I don't know if it'll fit in the conversation now, but I want to just share it a little later.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's great. We do want to come back. Cause as I prefaced in the beginning of the program, we're talking about one of the things that we are looking at, and one of the reasons why this might be a relevant discussion for us tonight, we're calling this our coffee shop discussion, is that, based on COVID 19 and everybody being confined inside mostly and not able to get out, these streaming networks are coming at us left and right. So when you need to have something to do, you might want, like I've been doing a lot of reading. I've been reading a lot. But other now and then, I want to read. I want to watch TV. I might sit back and relax my feet up and, maybe see what's playing. Lately, it's been junk and garbage. There's nothing on there. Just like you said, Sister Yarn. But, however, sometimes I will pay attention to it. Particularly if it's about black folk, I will attempt to watch it until if I can get to the point where I can't stomach it anymore, I turn it off because I don't want to watch that mess. But anyway,
Dr. Rogers.
Yeah, let me finish. You can come in.
Okay.
I'm struggling with some of the future things. And so that's why I wanted to talk about this tonight. Because we're getting ready to get more of this. There's some more stuff. They got a lot of films coming at us now, getting ready to happen. So do that. So, but Brother Herbie, go right ahead, because I know you saw the Black Panther. I mean, not Black Panther, I'm sorry. You saw the Fred Hampton, didn't you?
Yes, I saw the Fred Hampton movie.
Okay, all right.
But what I want to start out with is any movie that's commercially produced, I'm very suspect of.
Okay.
And 99% of the time, it's not going to be accurate. And it's not going to portray black people as in any heroic way.
Right.
And even though you would take a Fred Hampton and whatnot, and it would tell you what he actually did, which is heroic, at the same time, it will tell you what happens to a hero.
Right. Right.
So everything black people do in this country is a reaction.
That's exactly right.
We do not function from what comes from our inner thoughts. We function from reacting to what has happened to us and what is happening to us. So if you want to write a movie, you're going to have to get permission.
Yep.
That's right.
And funding.
You're going to have to give, if it's commercially produced, you're going to have to get permission.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody that saw the Black Panther movie, Black Panther, you know, what was it? It was two black men fighting each other.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing was two black men fighting each other over power.
Right. And that clearly
had a CIA, white CIA person helping them.
Mm.
That's right.
And also, what I watch most of these movies with trepidation. You're very, very, very seldom, if any, will ever see a black hero.
That's true.
They're going to always make them flawed. If they make a movie about Billie Holiday, it's going to be about her drug addiction. It's always going to be that negative part. When you watch an old movie like The Raisin in the Sun, it shows black people struggling and ending up with nothing. Like your dreams ain't never going to come true. That's what the movie, whenever you see a movie about black people, you end up watching, and at the end of the movie, you end up being sad.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yep. Just like they did in that Turner movie.
And as far as the Fred Hampton movie, I watched the documentary, and I'll get it to you because I put it in the email. We're talking with the brothers that was part of the Panthers in 68 and 69, and they said that William O'Neill wasn't allowed in that house. He was not allowed because they didn't trust him.
Mm-hmm.
He said he was not allowed in that house.
Okay.
He was not in the house the night before Fred Hampton was killed.
Yeah, I heard something. Didn't he just commit suicide or something?
In the documentary, they said he committed suicide, but nobody ever saw his body. Nobody ever saw a funeral.
Exactly right. And you're so...
So this is Sister Bonisoir.
All right, go right ahead.
Okay. So Brother Herbie, you know, alluded to what I wanted to say, and I'll just start it a little bit, because I didn't want to veer off too far from where you were going, Doc.
Thank you.
But I don't trust anything that Holly Weird puts out. I listened to Nate Parker when he was doing his best to promote Birth of a Nation.
Right.
And he said out of his mouth, everywhere that he could, and by the way, I'm hearing feedback constantly throughout the call. I don't know what that is. But he was promoting Birth of a Nation, like, you know, everywhere that he could. And he said very clearly that he went to black folk that could help him, so the ones with so-called power, which is a word that we should not be using in this country. We don't have no power. Not in the way that, not real power that could affect change.
Right.
Anyway, he said he went to Oprah Winfrey. Oprah said no. She would not support the film financially. He went to Madea, or what's his name? Tyler Perry. He said no. He would not support the film. He went to Lee Daniels. Daniel said no. So the so-called movers and shakers that are black in that industry, they all refuse Birth of a Nation.
Yep. Yes.
But that other film that came out, what's the one about Jesus, the torture of this one that they call Jesus? What was the name of that film that that crazy white boy made?
Is that the Mel Gibson movie?
Yeah. I mean, black folk, what was the name of that movie?
Which one? The one about the one Mel Gibson made?
Oh, my goodness, I can't.
Passion of Christ.
Right.
Yeah, that was the one about Jesus Christ.
Right. That one came out, I think, a little before Birth of a Nation. Black people were renting buses all over the nation. Black churches were renting out movie houses to go and see that movie.
Yes, sure was.
That movie made so much money, it was ridiculous. Made by a white supremacist. And Nate Parker, trying to wake us up to Nat Turner, who was a Christian, but a revolutionary Christian. He was trying to tell that story. And that movie got such a, just a small amount of black folk, of our population, watching that movie.
Yes.
And they made it hard for him. So I don't trust this industry to do anything that's going to benefit us. It's going to make us resentful. It's going to make us angry. It's going to bring up shame with the, you know, the coon behavior. And I can get into a good laugh. I definitely could get into a good, I laugh at anything. Mm-hmm. But enough of the coonery.
Right.
Yeah.
We've had too much of that. And then that spills out into our community. So we've been playing things like the dozens, you know, we used to call when I was growing up, ranking each other out. We've been doing that forever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? So all of this gets put on screen. And what do white people see?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever they see, of us depicted as, that's what they believe.
Right, exactly.
And that's just not good. That's not healthy for us.
And you are so right. It has the imagery of that has a powerful impact, and everybody knows it, because even when D.W. Griffin, the white filmmaker, came out with the movie Birth of a Nation, the white Birth of a Nation, back in the 1914, he came out with that movie. Depicting negative stuff. The president, the sitting president at the time, Woodrow Wilson, said that when he saw, he had the film shown at the White House. He had a guest viewing at the White House, and he said the movie was history written in lightning. So you are able to determine that this has impact. That night, they said, after that film was shown and went around, people were going around, whites were burning down houses, lynching blacks, shooting blacks. That was a real outflow of what happened when Birth of a Nation premiered in America, in particular in the South. It was very, very, very negative. And also King Kong. King Kong had very negative impact in America when it was shown, because obviously everybody was able, particularly all the white supremacists and racists, knew that gorilla was depicting an African Americans coming into your cities, tearing it up, and messing with your white women, and King Kong has been playing all the way into the 2000s. They're still doing that, you know. And
there's a new one coming out. You know that?
Yeah, I heard another one. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's
King Kong and Godzilla. I mean, how many times you got to make that movie?
Now,
because
keep making that point. Yeah, you're right. Exactly. And now let me ask this. Let me first ask this question. What about the Billie Holiday, the United States versus Billie Holiday? I know somebody mentioned the fact of depicting Billie Holiday's drug abuse as opposed to the good things about her. But what do you think? And now, this was done by Lee Daniels. Now, we know what Lee Daniels has done. You know, Lee Daniels is the one that did Monster Ball. Lee Daniels has done Precious. Lee Daniels did that thing that came on Fox, that TV program. So, but getting away from that, what do you think is going on there? Why is Lee Daniels able to successfully depict that movie? We all know the answer, but I just want to put that out on the table to talk about it. Anybody want to come on, Lee Daniels?
I'll say this. And I'd like to hear, you know, the discussion go a little deeper, too. I'm wondering why Lee Daniels, Oprah Winfrey, and I don't know what Madea is doing, but they're all putting out movies about black folk now that are more serious, supposedly, more revolutionary, supposedly, or at least have more consciousness, and I'm wondering why.
Who's doing that?
Oprah. Oprah is doing, she recently did some movie about some black historical figure, and I don't know that she's done any of those. I think it's out new. Like I said, I don't really get into movies like that,
okay.
But I think I just heard about it last night. I don't know if anybody else has heard of it.
I know
she. Mm-mm, I
haven't. No, I didn't.
Because Oprah to me is more so Illuminati, so I can't see her putting out a revolutionary.
Yeah,
I can't think of anything.
Back then. That's her favorite thing to do.
Right.
But yeah, they're all putting out black so-called conscious movies now. So I think part of it is to pacify the Black Lives Matter movement.
Okay.
So, that did start protests all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so they know that, you know, a good piece of entertainment will kind of shut the Negroes down a little bit. It will keep us quiet for a minute.
Yes.
Right.
I think that's part of what happened.
Okay.
Now, I ask a sister to join us now, because mostly all of us online now, you know, are up in our ages. I don't know what everybody's age is, but we are looking at a different perspective. So I asked somebody from the millennial group to come and join this conversation and talk a little bit about some of those films that are coming out.
They're talking about the Bill of Holiday.
If you're coming online, could you please mute the phone? Could you please mute your phone? Okay, thank you. I asked her to join to talk. Sister Chambers, are you on? I noticed your phone is mute. I see your picture. Sister Chambers, are you on?
Hello.
Okay,
hey,
great.
Dr.
Great.
Rod, how
okay.
are you?
All right. Well, this question is coming towards you. Okay.
Okay.
Last year, during the winter months, Showtime, it was Stars, decided to come out with a movie called P-Valley. Now, I don't know how many are on here that have seen it outside of the young lady. The young lady that I'm calling on, Ms. Chambers, produces one of our Black Reality Think Tank programs called Black Sister Talk, and she is representing the millennial group. P-Valley. Now, a lot of us that are out here, older folks, have you heard of P-Valley? Have any of you heard of P-Valley?
I haven't.
I've heard of the series, but I haven't seen it.
Okay. Well, P-Valley is a series about a strip club in Mississippi.
Yeah.
And it's raw. And I'm talking, they have homosexual sex scenes in there that are very, very heavy. They talk about everything. And it kind of goes in line with some of the other things that we hear in music. A lot of it is being pushed by music. As you know, the strip clubs are major conduits for rap artists, for up-and-coming rap artists. If you can get your song into a strip club, it's better than getting it on the radio. Because it has pop value. It has real pop value. And then there was another, to speak to that, there was a song that recently was released by Cardi B, the rap artist Cardi B, called WAP. Now, how many of us, the older folk, know what WAP was? Anybody know what that is?
Dr. Rogers, you're telling on yourself.
Oh, yeah, I'm getting, I listen. I listen to it. And, you know, one of the reasons I listen to it, because I got grandkids trying to listen to it. I asked my 10-year-old granddaughter, have you ever heard of a song called WAP? And she started laughing. I said,
oh, my Lord.
I said, have you heard the song called WAP? And she kept laughing. Grandpa, I don't want to talk about that. You know, so that means she knew what it was. So, Sister Chambers, good or bad, WAP, P-Valley, is that what we need to be programming into the homes of black folk? Sister Chambers? Sister LaWanda?
I think she cut out, Dr. Rod.
Yeah,
can you hear me?
Oh, my Lord.
Sister LaWanda?
Look.
Oh, Lord. You can't hear me. Hold on.
Okay, I can hear you. I can hear you now.
Oh, okay. So, first of all, this is a couple of answers to that question. Yes, I have seen P-Valley. I did not get to see it when it first came out. But due to COVID and running out of things to watch on TV, you get to checking out everything.
Okay.
So I'm not using that as an excuse.
But that's what I'm talking
I'm
about.
I'm using it as the reason why I watched it. We got to keep an open mind, first of all, because these are people's lives. Even though they are fictional, those characters could very well be relatable to a lot of people out here in our community. And because the way the society is going, sex sells. And we're seeing that sex sells no matter what kind of sex it is. We're seeing homosexuals on television, things we haven't seen before. I like to think that I grew up very traditional with a lot of Southern folks behind me. So to see how things are just being put out on the forefront, how it is, is disturbing. You know, we come up from a time when parents see us and we watching two people kiss, man and woman, and your parents thought they was going to have some sex. Your hand got put over your eyes and you was told to cover your ears. Parents aren't doing that anymore. Parents are not censoring these things that their children are watching, and they're coming to the reality of, well, they're going to see it anyways, so they might as well experience it with me. And so we should not be programming this into our children, to answer your question. Right. But the parents have to step up and be parents and set those boundaries. And that's what we're missing right now in our homes, boundaries. These kids will cuss their parents out in 2.2 seconds, you know, and that's because the parents have no respect for the child and the child has no respect for the parent.
Right. Exactly. Mm. Exactly right. Exactly. Thank you so much. For that. Yeah, and that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with, because, like she said, the COVID, and just people are just trying to do things, that stuff is coming at us like crazy. That P-Valley, and then that other one on Stars that was is done by 50 Cent that he has, that's dealing with drug life and all kind of stuff. And like I said, a lot of the presentation in it is very raw. And it is open to kids. Parents may not be at home. Children are going to watch that. Everybody, all these kids got iPhones and telephones with earplugs. They listening to Cardi B. You don't know what they're listening to. What you listening to? Oh, I'm just listening to the radio. I said, let me hear what you listening to. It went off now. And that's the way my grandmother told me. It went off now. I said, no,
sure,
you know, cause, and I'm trying to catch her what she's listening to. And it's raw. It's really, it really is. And they don't have to get it off radio. Radio, you would say, was censored. They can just go on the internet and listen to that.
That's right. And you know, see stuff. It too.
Anybody else?
Well, you know, Doc Rogers.
Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Doc Rogers, well, you know, 50 Cent, and you know where his political stance is. And he is so anti-us, and he's all about profit and money. And he knows what these white people like, and they do not have to put out these shows about the goings-on in regards to sexual relations and so forth. You're not going to see anything like that about Fred Astaire, Judy Garland, Marilyn Monroe. But all these people had lives like that. What was the guy that was with Sammy Davis Jr.? Frank Sinatra.
Dean Martin.
It's Dean Martin. All those guys were big-time womanizers. And was said, and Richard Pryor even made a comment that they all even got with each other.
Brother Ray.
That was
right,
just something that they did.
Right.
But they're not going to make a movie and exploit them like that. They want to keep a certain image about them, and then they want to open the floodgates with us. And so I wasn't real crazy about how many times they had to show Billie Holiday in sexual relationships and in the type of relationships that she had, the way they portrayed that. But that's very allowable and the way they want us to image those type of things, and you know, and yeah, they showed the cruelty, you know, but again, you know, the way they exploit us in a sexual way,
right?
And the way we look at each other and see these things and normalize it,
exactly.
And that's what you see. And then you get somebody of that stature to do what she did, you know, singing the song Poison Fruit, and they, you know, and everything that she went through and the evil that they did, and man, it was sickening and heartbreaking, but they never miss an opportunity
to
show a man not being in sync with himself.
Right.
They're always going to show the men, most men, if they're true with themselves, they're going to be a woman.
Right. And that's what this COVID is doing.
It's terrible that they do that. It's for that reason.
The COVID-19 is creating the opportunity to do this, and they burning the rubber. And I sat back the other day and I looked. I said, "Man, look at they coming at us with all this stuff, you know." And that's why I thought this would be a very good conversation. Just in case those that have joined us, I just want to say this is our Thursday edition of the Black Reality Think Tank. We are doing a coffee shop discussion, and I've asked a lot of our friends that are quite often here to come on and let's talk about this piece. We will be filling this time slot very soon with a regular program next Thursday. As a matter of fact, we're going to be broadcasting from the motherland. We have a sister from the Cameroon who's going to come on and talk about things that we can do to trade with our businesses in Africa and here in America, the kind of conversation that we want to do. And so she'll be on next Thursday at this time. And then hopefully after that, we'll still have some other programs that we can do of this type. The Tuesday program is still on. That's still our regular, normal focus conversation. But this is a coffee shop conversation. And so right now we have Brother Sister LaWanda Chambers, who is with the Black Sister Talk. She's on. I just saw Brother Otis Griffin pop on. Brother Timothy popped on. Sister Jan is on here. Brother Lush. Brother Herbie White. It looks like and Brother Kwazi is on. And Sister Dee Dee is on. And I see Brother Bruce Bridges just joined on, and Brother Robinson is on. And so we've got folk that are here that we can really talk about this. And so if there are any of you on the Internet, you can call us at 215-490-9832 and express your opinion. This is free and open, so anybody can come in that you want to. I do have to, however, take a quick break. We're at the top of the hour. We're going to come back and talk more about some of this stuff. Particularly, I want to talk about that Billie Holiday piece, because I think Lee Daniels kind of degraded her a little bit. Well, not a little bit. He degraded her a lot. I do not think he needed to have done all of that. This woman was brilliant. Yes, she had a drug problem, and obviously, but still, she was a brilliant musician, and she played a major role in the development of Harlem in those early years. So I think that was just not a way. So anyway, let's take this quick break, and we're going to come right back. Let's take let Billie Holiday kind of help us out in this break.
Once I was young, yesterday perhaps, danced with Jim and Paul and kissed some other chaps. Once I was young, but never was naive. I thought I had a trick or two up my imaginary sleeve. And now I met you. Oh, was too. I didn't know what day it was. You held my hand, warm like the month of May was, and I'll say it was grand. Your touch, hear your voice, say I'm all your own. I didn't know what year it was. Life was no.
Monday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspective, with host Brother Oshi, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., same time, same place. Continued Monday lineup, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds, with host Brother Jihad Ahmed, 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., Black Therapy Central, host Dr. Mawia Kambon, and Sister Nataki Kambon, 9 p.m. till 10 p.m., Conversation Reparations, first and third Mondays. On Tuesday, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers. On Thursday, 7 p.m. till 9 p.m., Melanin Live with host Lance Jones, co-host Boniswa Ayan. Fridays, 8 p.m. till 10 p.m., Time for an Awakening, with creator of Time for an Awakening and host, Brother Elliot, co-hosted by Brother Richard. Saturday, 4 p.m. till 6 p.m., Black Sister Talk, with host Wanda Chambers. 7 p.m. till 9 p.m., The Elders of Sankofa. And Sunday, 7 p.m. till 9 p.m., Time for an Awakening, host Brother Elliot and co-host Brother Richard. Check us out.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Okay, my sisters and brothers, we are back with a discussion on the imagery of our people, particularly during this COVID-19 crisis that we are under. This is a subtle manner that I think to get into the minds of our people and to continue to perpetrate some of those negative images and ideas that we show. This is all a part of what we call intellectual racism. You can program and do stuff like this. And we, in a sense, you kind of welcome it because, you know, like you said, you know, sometimes you just want to do something different. I mean, I've been doing a lot of reading. I read all kind of books lately. Reread some stuff that I haven't read in a long time. But then you want to put it down, do something else. I listen to music sometimes. I do this and this. And every now and then you want to write. Well, what a perfect way to come at you in terms of doing this. And that's why I'm raising this topic tonight for discussion. And I thank all of you, our family, Black Reality Think Tank family, for joining us. And that's really who we have online there. We have all of you that have been with us. We do have a large internet audience there. If you'd like to call in and give your comments, our number is area code 215-490-9832. Now, all of the lines are open, so I would like to ask our those of you who are on the switchboard, your lines are open, so be mindful of the fact that any background noise can pick up. And I wanted to leave them open because you can just chime in and whenever you need to and discuss and talk about that. But the slightest movement will make noise, and it does kind of sometimes create distraction. So be mindful of that. And again, thank you all for joining this conversation. This is really good. Brother Lush, I was going off, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, real quick. I think I want to kind of tag on to Sister Ayan, you know, one of the things that is a real, real issue in our community is functional illiteracy. And so I think one of the issues that that really plays a part in this movie kind and type of industry
right.
is that if I could get a person to sit still for a good 2 hours mm-hmm. and be socialized or be brainwashed or be programmed or whichever word you want to use, then I got you where I want you.
Right.
So you no longer have to rely on cracking open the book to read or trying to research other pieces and types of literature to try to either validate or deny what you're seeing. And so I think subliminally speaking, this is the kind and type of thing that's happening. In addition to that, we have this technology that we're dealing with,
yes,
each and
yes.
every one of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so it you just can't help but lose some of your humanity. You can't help but lose it because we're not in each other's company. We see these computer screens and images of each other. And so all we could do is look at what we see and then project some, you know, whatever is in our subconscious minds outward. Yeah. So when you mentioned about Cardi B, when you mentioned about Doja, you didn't mention Doja Cat, but I do listen to all of those. And so with regards to sex, look at the kind and type of thing that it is doing to us as human beings,
yes.
yet we're being hypocritical and saying we want to be able to be a human. We want to be able to express ourselves to other people. How can we do that when we're talking through phones and computer screens?
That's right. That's right.
And so that's the point that I wanted to try to bring out. Yes, there is functional illiteracy in our community. Yes, we're being drained of our humanity as we continue to view these kinds and types of images. Thank you so very much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You are
Dr.
so
Dr. Rogers.
Right. Yes, go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Yes, since this is coffee shop, I want to jump right in.
Because no.
I was so sleepy earlier, but see, y'all woke me up now.
Well, getting good. Deep. All right.
I was getting deep. Y'all waking me up. Listen, there are some words that I heard that I just kept in my mental notes. Number one, Dr. Rogers, you said programming. That's exactly what's going on.
Yes.
That's right.
And for the younger, anyone from the younger generation that's on, every generation gets a huge dose of programming.
Mm-hmm.
Every generation. I remember the cartoon, somebody mentioned the Three Stooges. I was cracking up because they used to make me laugh like crazy.
Yeah.
But I remember those cartoons back in the day where they had the big old mammies and the pickaninnies and the three little niggas and all these crazy forms of entertainment that black folk were watching and laughing at.
Yeah.
Now, it was funny. Somebody said it. Without the level of consciousness and the level of self-love, it is funny. And you look at, look at those three little niggas. And now I look at it and we say, how pitiful. But they programmed the whole generation.
Mm-hmm.
So this generation is getting their dose of programming of polysexuality and money.
Right.
And everything else that's just crazy and whatnot.
Right.
The other thing is that somebody mentioned the word exploit. And I see the exploitation of black folk during COVID. We're the ones that run and sit in front by these big old giant screen TVs.
Can't afford it.
You know, got to be a part of this football team and that football and buy this paraphernalia. Can't afford it.
Nope.
But they're exploiting our ignorance and our desire to belong to this system that doesn't want us.
Right. Exactly.
So if we just watch all the movies and we just stay current on all of this junk and who's running for governor and president and all this other nonsense that they keep on pumping at us, then they can continue to get all of our money that we barely have.
That's exactly.
So that's the exploitation part. They're exploiting a generation of activists. I want to make this point with these movies now, Harriet Tubman and Fred Hampton and whatnot. That's another form of exploitation because who's getting paid from all of this.
That's right. That's right.
Not black folk. The other two things I want to mention is that the name of Dr. Rogers' show is Black Reality Think Tank. And I want to focus on two words, black and think.
Right.
So when black people see all of this programming, especially this generation, my question is, what is this generation thinking about our struggle?
Mm-hmm.
When they see all of this stuff, when they see, you know, the murder of Fred Hampton, the takedown of the Black Panthers, and everything that we've done and how it was taken down and destroyed, and how everybody in Hollyweird is a drug addict, that ain't nothing new.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's right.
But why do they have to focus on Billie Holiday and whoever else?
That's right.
You know, and the other half are homosexual and polysexual. So, you know, why they got to put all of that on us? So what are our youth thinking about our struggle as a result of what they are programming right. at us?
Let me ask the group this question. When television, for instance, in the majors, CBS, NBC, ABC, Fox, and all of that, when they were showing that image of that cop's knee on George Floyd's neck, and when Rodney King was beat that time by those L.A. officers, and they kept showing it over and over and over and over and over again, like they're still doing it. Well, is there something going on there that maybe a lot of us miss?
Yes,
sir.
Yes, doctor.
Yeah, well, there good. Hey, Brother Marcus, how you doing? How you doing? I didn't know that was you. Okay, good. The number's a little different than what before. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm sitting in the court, brother.
Okay.
Yeah, you know what they're doing. You know what they're doing. They're prepping the society for the coming onslaught of black people.
Mm.
See? That's what they're doing. They're prepping the society that when they move on black people, the world won't say anything, and nobody in America will say anything, because you know, we are animals anyway. See, that's what they dehumanize us. But what we have to remember, you know, white folks ain't going to let us use the media to destroy them. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they're keeping their ear to the ground, you know. They know what's going on. They know that there is a heightened awareness among black people. So that's why you see all these revolutionary movies coming out. You're going to see a movie on Marcus Garvey coming out probably soon.
Yep.
See? Because they know they keep their ear to the ground. But you know the tragic thing? We go and support the movie.
Right.
We go watch it. You know? No, we should boycott it and should boycott these Negroes that's putting these movies out too.
That's
see?
Right.
We should put them on blast. You see, we shouldn't be hey, leader and put out a movie, blast him.
Yeah.
See, Oprah put out a movie, blast him. Those Negroes' head should be on a swivel, looking behind their back, wondering what the hell going on. But you see, we just let our enemies just run amok.
Yeah.
You see, we got to change the attitude. And you see, they say love is the universal language. Hell no, it's pain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, pain. Universal language.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do it. That's what keep us in line with this white man. This Muzungu is pain. Because if you get out of line, you got something for you. And our people know that. That's why we walk the line. We walk the straight line. But as I said, these people ain't gonna change. They putting out these movies because one, they know there's money to be made from that movie here, Black Panther. They said, what? $1 billion of money out there with these black
people.
They're putting the trash out, and we have to identify who is doing it too, because it's not all white folks. It's a specific group of white folks that's doing it. It's a specific group of white folks that run the record industry. It's a specific group of white people that run the film industry. It is the chosen one. We know the chosen of God.
Right.
Those are the people doing it. Those people. See? So, you know, I'm getting upset.
That's all right.
My brother, keep talking. Don't get upset. I love it.
That's right. Look, you know,
Brother Marcus. My brother, keep talking. Don't get upset.
I was saying, brother.
No, we love you, Brother Marcus. So we got you.
Yeah, we do. We do. And that's why we call this the coffee shop discussion. We get, you might have to go get a cup of coffee, get some of that caffeine.
Yeah, Brother Marcus, get a cup of coffee and come on back.
Right. You know, and you really do need to put. We really do need to put people like. We need to put people like Eddie Murphy on blast. I think really needs to be put on blast. I mean, what he did with that Coming to America 2, and what he did with that Rudy Ray Moore piece that he did, you know, I'm sorry. I can't see where that has no redeeming factor whatsoever. Glorifying pimping, the history of pimping. And I remember coming as, like somebody said, when you were younger, Brother Les said, when you were younger and you liked to laugh, I remember listening to Rudy Ray Moore albums. I remember listening
That's right.
And I understand
Dolomite.
Right, Dolomite. Yeah. But when I got older, I said, oh, man, this is a mess here. Well, I'm listening to this crap, boy. You know, you're right. Dr. Bridges, let me ask you something. I know you're on there. Dr. Bridges, you are on, right? Dr. Bridges? Doc, you might have your phone on mute.
Give me a minute. I had to take my mute off. I'm here.
Right, okay. Dr. Bridges, not to put you on the stop, but do you remember back years ago a guy named Marshall McLuhan? He wrote a book called Medium is the Message.
Mm-mm, I'm not familiar.
Okay, well, McLuhan was a sociologist, and he was writing around 1955, and he said that the coming of the electronic age is going to turn this world completely around, and he predicted that, and at that time, we was just getting into television. He said, but you're going to get stuff so that it's going to create such a ripple effect on a culture and on people that it would be just devastated. And a lot of people have looked at, he was a Canadian sociologist who was writing, and he would talk about things like, even for instance, having microwave popcorn. So people were going to eat that junk and it's not going to be healthy, or that wives that normally would cook a good meal, or people who would cook a good meal for the family, are going to use TV dinners. And it's going to change the way we do everything. And very clearly, if you read that, it was kind of the 1984 of its day, you know, kind of thing. You know, the coming of that of this generation. So, and you're right; it has done this. So I just thought maybe you might have remember McLuhan. His name is Marshall McLuhan. For anybody that wanted to take a look at the book.
No, but. I'm not familiar with him, but I am familiar with something that you made me think of that relates directly to everything that we're talking about tonight, and especially what Benicia Wild was mentioned, and Brother Lush, I think, too. And that is the book by Pax, Subliminal Seduction. Some of you, I see some people in the classroom tonight that are familiar with that. I hear people hollering, Subliminal Seduction.
Right.
And That talks about how we look at these movies, but there's more to it that we can't see on the surface. But if you go beneath, or subliminal, you go beneath the conscious mind, there are a lot of things that are projected onto the subconscious mind that really take control of our lives, and we don't even know it. For example, there are certain frames that they flick into the movies and that they shoot on the screens real quick. That, like I said, your conscious mind didn't even pick it up. But next thing you know, you're out in the lobby buying some popcorn with butter on top of it, you see, because they advertise all kinds of things they put in the movies that our mind can't pick up. And that's a very good book too, Subliminal Seduction. I first heard about it from Wallace D. Muhammad. He really did a good lecture at one time on Subliminal Seduction. And so, and another point that I want to mention is that when you look at and see, and I think, like I told you earlier, I'm not really a movie person that much at all. Not really, as a matter of fact, not really a TV person. And I used to have an agent in New London, Connecticut, this brother I know, and he would, he didn't even have TV in his house, he had children and everything, but no TV in the house. And I can see how, first of all, it's very addictive because you got the audio and the visual, and it just takes control of your mind more so than, say, listening to a radio talk show like the Black Reality Think Tank or something else on some other radio outlets. But it's hard to fight against audio and visual at the same time. And that's, but, and then, like, I think Denise watched, somebody mentioned, now they got the flat screens and the Roku and everything to make it all just attractive to us. Right. And it's just really hard, you know. But I'm really not a television person. Now, before I call you, I called Tim McIver, and believe it or not, I said, are you listening to Dr. Rogers? And I tuned in late. I got mixed up on the time on this one. But he said, no, man, I didn't know Dr. Rogers was on tonight. I said, yeah, turn him on. I said, he said, I'm going to try to turn him on. He said, but I'm, for the second time, I'm looking at the Tulsa race riot of 1921 mm-hmm. and what they did in Tulsa, Oklahoma. He said, I'm very familiar with it. But he said, I did not know it was a planned, organized takeover by design when white people in Oklahoma took over Greenwood, Archer, and Pine Streets. And he said, so those are the kinds of things I usually watch. Right. Now, I did watch the Billie Holiday okay. movie, and I heard you mention that one.
What kind of job do you think he did on Billie Holiday?
I didn't think he did a good job on Billie Holiday at all. The only thing I can say, first of all, I didn't like the way her character was shown, and her integrity, was compromised. It compromised tremendously. I didn't like that. The only thing I picked up was, which I did not know, was the United States government's intervention into her life and trying to stop her in terms of singing anything positive. And it just reminds me of how the same thing that happened with her in the 40s and 50s happened in the United States, or happens even today. There are certain kinds of songs that you cannot put out in the musical industry and expect them to be heard. Exactly. They're not going to allow it. Even when it goes back to our entertainers, look at the problems that Barry Gordy had with Marvin Gaye when he put out What's Going On, you see. Mm-hmm. So it's all by design and by programming. One other point I wanted to make, too, and that is, and this is why I really don't do a lot of movie watching, because there is so much and so many deep episodes and situations in our history, our real history, in reality, right. in the history of the black man and black woman in America, that if Tyler Perry and the brother that did Billie Holiday and the ones that, you know, other movie producers, Eddie Murphy, and all, if they really wanted to do something, just look into the history of black people. They could make some tremendous cowboy movies. They could make some tremendous war movies with mm-hmm. Shaka mm-hmm. and the Zulu situation, or with Queen and Zynga, or with Toussaint Louverture. There's so much to grab upon if we knew our history and took what we know and then put it into movie form. It will make a big difference in the world. We don't even have to deal with fiction. You know, we just throw fiction out the window because right. there's so much truth that we could deal with. So that's basically where I am. I'm really not a TV person, so I said.
Okay. All right, though. You're getting a good analysis. Let me, Brother White, you had mentioned something earlier in your comment, and I want to go back to you about that whole thing about you can't allow, Hollywood does not allow black heroes to reign in a lot of the pictures. You know, they may come out, and we know them in history as our heroes, but when they are depicted in these pictures, they'll do them, whether it's in fiction or in fact. Let me ask you, Brother White, you and I had preliminarily talked about this before the program. Queen and Slim, what was the message in Queen and Slim? And by the way, I want to say one point that I want to also make note to everybody. One other factor that's always used in all of this is that a lot of these things, they play them over and over and over again. I don't know how many times Queen Slim have played I think it's HBO. HBO has shown Queen Slim or just consistently.
So I didn't like that at all.
So what do you think, Brother White? What's the message in Queen and Slim? Brother White? Brother Herbie White? I don't know if
you... Hello. Yeah, I was on mute.
Right.
The message is, no matter what you do, in whatever situation you're in, if you're black, you're going to come to a bad end.
That's exactly right. And they came to a dead end.
There's no way out for you. There's no way. There's no positive ending.
Right.
They're never going to make a movie depicting white supremacy and its effect on all of the in the movie that they make, Billie Holiday, the Miami Miss, they're not going to tell you what role white supremacy played in these people's lives. Mm-hmm. Not, so that's the real truth of the movie. What really happened to us? Who's the real villain? Mm-hmm. You're never going to see that.
No, never.
And the power of suggestion, when we was kids, we went to the movie on Saturday, and whatever we saw, that's what we became. If it was a cowboy and Indian movie, we went home and we played cowboys and Indians. Mm-hmm. If it was a gladiator movie, we went home and we played gladiators. We got sticks and nailed a little piece across, and we was gladiators. That's the power of suggestion.
Yes, it is.
So when you're looking at love and hip hop,
okay,
that's the power of suggestion.
Yep. Atlanta housewives, basketball wives, all that.
And so all of these movies, like I didn't see that P thing, whatever, but all this, they telling you that this is all right.
Yep.
That this is all right. If you see it, it has an effect on you, and you react to that, you respond to that effect.
Let me ask this, Brother White, while I got you on there. What in conjunction, what you just said, what about the soaps that used to come on, Search for Tomorrow, As the World Turns? And all that. These were a lot of white folks stuff. But what was that message? Yeah, who was that for, you think, during those years? And that was big, those soap operas.
That was telling you that white lives matter.
Okay.
That's what that was. White lives matter. You tuned in every day to see what white people were doing.
Mm-hmm. And they were living well.
Yep.
And
you
nice
tuned
homes.
In, see how they
can
live.
Yep, exactly right.
You didn't see nothing that related to anything you knew, but you turned on and watched every day to see how white people were living.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
To see what Erica was going to do.
Right. Brother Lush, you want to come in there?
Brother, Dr. Rogers, keep swinging that pendulum back a little bit further back, because we have exploitation films. We had Foxy Brown. We had Trouble Man. We had all of these other kinds and types of imagery that played on. I know it played on me. Black Caesar was one that played on me. I'm going to admit to that. And so so we had those kinds of imagery throughout, I guess, our diaspora, all our time in across the diaspora. And so I guess, you know, it's just so interesting how we view things when we were 16, 17, 18, and then into our 30s, and then to our 40s, and some of us into our 60s. It's just so interesting how that pendulum is swinging.
Yes, it
and
is.
So I was hoping that eventually you start to get to the black exploitation films of those days that, really, I mean, there were some days I came out of the theater, you know, a little bobbing and weaving, and I wasn't on any drugs either.
Mm-hmm.
It was that imagery that was just, it did something to you.
That's right. It really did. All right.
Dr. Rogers.
Yes, sir.
On that note that Brother Lust just made, white people made movies about Humphrey Bogart and James Cagney and all of them people. They weren't called white exploitation movies.
True.
So how did they turn that around and turn us upside down? And when they did it, they made themselves out of heroes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
True. I want to respond to that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because they're experts at diabolical activity.
Yes.
And I remember those black exploitation movies. I just watched one recently, actually. Pam Grier, one of those movies mm-hmm. that she was in. And I watched it, you know, with conscious adult eyes. And the first thing I did was get like our brother Marcus got. I got angry. I got so pissed off. Because this gorgeous woman, the first thing you do is see her show all of her breasts.
You know, back in the day when you didn't see much, you didn't see that in the movies, you know, unless you went to an X-ray or something. So this beautiful queen, I'm sure they made her expose her breasts when I didn't, you know. So that really bothered me. Yeah. Back in the day, it was like, ooh, you know, like it's something exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when they started making all those pimp movies and, you know, like the brother was just mentioning, it had a major effect on us because, once again, we are not the wealthy class the wealthy group in this nation or anywhere else. But what did our brothers start wearing?
Superfly, what do you call those things?
Mm-hmm. What did you say, sis?
Superfly, the Mac. Every brother had a Superfly suit with his John Hardy sacks on.
Right.
Come on, sister. Those big old platform shoes that could barely walk.
John Hardy sack. And we women, we had our little sizzler dresses on with our afros.
Yep, I'm going to get you something.
Yeah, so they had us going out buying stuff that made us look like clowns when you look back at it, you know, especially the brothers with those big giant hats and all those long coats and all of that stuff. That was money, those diamond in the back, sun rooftop, you know, everybody doing the game for them. That had an impact on everybody in the hood.
Yeah, everybody went out and bought an El Dorado with the big fog light.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Brother Griffin is online. He just wrote a little something here that really made me laugh because I think about myself. He said, some of us resisted those image makers from birth. He said his mom tells the story of making me wear a Davy Crockett outfit to match my older sister's Annie Oakley outfit.
Oh, man.
And I know Dr. Bridges and I would talk about that one time. I used to want to get a Long Ranger mask and get a gun with the silver bullet stuff. You know, and when we played cowboy, we didn't want to be no Indians. I didn't want to be Tonto. I wanted to be the Long Ranger. And that's the way they were programming us that way.
And you know, Dr. Rogers, let me throw this in really quick, because as much as I love my father, he was an older man.
Uh-huh.
And he loved cowboy pictures to the day he died.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember him as an adult man having a real gun and pulling it out like a cowboy, you know, just mimicking those shows.
Yep.
And that's how deep it goes into the psyche. And I looked at it, and I wasn't impressed. And I loved my daddy, but I wasn't impressed. And something in me said, because I was a young adult at that time, like, right, something's wrong with this picture here.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we
Go right ahead,
brother.
I'm going to say this, Dr. Rogers, before we close out, I want to talk about Hicks and Cornell West.
Say it again.
And I want to tell you, sir, that...
No, wait, Brother Griffin. Wait before you jump to that, okay? Let me finish what we're doing here now first. Brother Griffin.
Okay. Oh, can you hear me, Dr. Rogers?
Yeah, I can hear you, sir. Yes, I can.
Yeah, I was going to tell you, interesting life. I heard the other brother say that he doesn't watch movies. I tell people, honestly, until I became a father at 40, almost 40 years old, I hadn't paid for a movie since I saw Jaws, and that was trying because I was courting a young lady that wanted to go see the movie.
What's the name of the movie?
That kind of stuff. Pardon me?
What was the name of the movie?
Jaws.
Jaws. Okay.
Unlike the other brother that said that he don't do much, but the interesting thing is because I'm so connected to other people, I always listen to their critique of it, you know, like even when they had the Up and Down crew that used to be professionals at it. So I usually end up finding out that, just as that brother say, everything from just like the Wakanda movie, I don't have to watch it when you end up telling me the CIA man gets control of all the riches in a nation that had a secret that could save the world.
Right.
So I'm pretty much, I think it's just innately built in me, and my family makes fun of me because they put the picture of me and my sister up on the back porch in those outfits.
Yeah,
and that's why my mom ended up telling me the story of it, that she didn't understand why I didn't like it. And even when the Lone Ranger came out, I wanted to be Tonto.
Okay.
You know, I had
Tonto. Oh, you want to be Tonto.
From the start.
I didn't want to be Tonto. I wanted to be the Lone Ranger.
Yeah, I said, but my thing was that Tonto would show up to save the white boy and then disappear, but he kept telling me the white boy was the hero. And he couldn't be successful until Tonto show up. I said, hey, I'm going to hang with Tonto.
Right.
I'm for the underdog.
Much
love, family.
That's it. Okay, Timothy raised something I want to get to real quickly. We don't have a lot of time left. I'm going to put two names out there, and I want you can respond to either one of them that I think I had definitely wanted us to talk about. It's a little different than we've been talking about in terms of the movies, but there's two names I wanted to put out there. The number one name, Meghan Markle and Oprah Winfrey. That's one together. Meghan Markle / Oprah Winfrey, and the other one is Cornel West. So launch into any one of those, anybody that wants to do. Everybody, the mic is open.
Well, I'm going to say something about Cornel West, who I know and been around, that I can say that Cornel is a guy who is able to do two things that a lot of people can't do. He's able to be in that system with them. He steps out of that system with them, and he's with us. I would say this about West, that he has been almost kicked out of their academy many times. One time he made a rap record. You know, he came to the Million Man March. And they look at him as an outcast. Now, I particularly like West, but at the same time, I think he's more deep in his lecture than he is in his books. Like, Race Matters didn't mean a lot to me. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of things that he says, he needs to put the words. Interesting about his lifestyle, but I like him over Skip Gates. Now, if you don't mind, can I say something about Skip Gates? Is that okay?
No, not yet. Meghan Markle / Oprah Cornel West, because we only got 15 minutes.
I'm going to stop with Corey next time we come around and talk about Skip.
We'll deal with Gates later. We'll get him. Okay, anybody else? Any of the ladies that are on, would you respond to Meghan Markle and Oprah Winfrey? What the hell was that about? Why did we need to hear that?
I think they're running out of news, Doc Rogers. I think they're just running out of news. You know, just running out of stuff to talk about. Okay. And I believe, you know, as it starts dying down, you know, just like when the water is boiling out the pot, so then you might want to put some more water in it or whatever.
Right.
But I think it's just running out of news because, you know what, I'm with you. Who cares?
Right.
Who cares?
Yeah, Meghan Markle knew what she was doing. She was marrying money.
That's right. Yeah.
Dr. Rogers.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
If I say what I want to say about Oprah and Meghan Markle, they'll take your show off the air.
Well, go ahead. Let's try it.
I'm going to say it anyway. Because I was going to say something. You might have taken their words out
of
my mouth.
Go ahead, Brother Herbert. Let's try it.
You'd be surprised how many people are thinking what you're thinking.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
They both need their ass beat.
My brother. Mm-mm. And like I said, Oprah is true Illuminati.
My perspective is, I'm sorry, Sister Judy, did I interrupt you?
Oh, no, go ahead, my sister. I'm sorry.
Okay. You want the other sister's perspective. Mine is that this sister calls Oprah and Gayle King and the rest of those the League of Mammy. And I'm with her on that. You know, Oprah is a mammy. She has a $1 billion mammy, but she has a white daddy that tells her what she can and what she cannot do.
That's right.
And whatever she does, I've noticed about this woman, because she's done so many things, especially trying to destroy black men. Once she started doing that, I started paying attention, and she causes more harm in the black community. That is starting to become obvious. And there was a point where a lot of black people were turning against her, so maybe this is her way of trying to draw black people back in, one of her ways.
Okay.
But it's pointless. Like she said, nobody cares. And she's getting paid, so she doesn't care.
Right.
She don't care.
Next generation.
She doesn't get paid.
You heard what
Dr. Rogers.
Yeah, I'll come right to you. You heard what... I'm going to come to you. I'll come to you. You heard what... Tyler Perry.
Perry.
Yeah, he took Megan and her husband in and let them stay in his mansion for a period of time. Isn't that right? Isn't there something like that they did?
Was this generation's soap operas?
Yeah, and then hired security to make sure to watch them.
She had black women thinking the show was for them, and none of them could afford the prizes, even if they won it, because they couldn't afford the taxes.
That's right, exactly. My sister, 754-1-4-7-5-9.
Hi, Dr. Rogers. Hi. Great show. I like what everybody is saying. What we got to realize is Oprah has to report back to the gatekeepers.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
She hasn't been... for us in a long time. It was not the show that she did with Meghan Markle and her husband wasn't to get back the popularity of black people. Mm-hmm. She want to know what this. She want to know what Meghan know, so the gatekeeper can know. And then while they sitting and talking, they sitting in silence in a room somewhere strategizing what they next move. I say that to say that. We better wake up and start focusing and paying attention to what is being said versus what is not being said and what is being done. If COVID-19 didn't teach us anything, it should have taught us that, because Oprah didn't do that show just on the whim.
Mm-hmm. You sure that?
And Dr. Rock, can I just say one more thing? You know what? White folks don't watch TV. White folks do not watch TV. They don't watch a whole lot of TV. No.
Okay.
And, you know, I want to add to that, please. Before we go, I think all of this is what they've been doing, and that's distracting us.
Mm-hmm.
They're always distracting.
Amen.
And I heard a brother said something that rang so true to me. He said that whenever they start promoting black. Whenever they started, he says, when they start running things in a loop, somebody mentioned earlier, they keep showing the same things over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever they start using these types of tactics, that means that it's a prerequisite to them doing something really bad to us. So I know we laughed a little bit, you know, and gave our insights. I wouldn't call it opinion, our insights and our observations. But whenever they do start doing something in a patternizing things, they are preparing to either create a really shitty law, a bad mm-hmm. law that's going to hurt us, yes. or put something in place that's damaging. Mm-hmm. So the sister just made me remember that I wanted to say that. We really should pay attention to what they're doing and why they're doing this. I think I mentioned that earlier.
Right.
Because the pattern, there's a pattern of this.
Yes.
It's behavior.
Yes, indeed.
So I want everybody to please hear that, because, you know, they're talking about martial law and this and that. Mm-hmm. Let's keep eyes mm-hmm. open. Keep eyes open.
Yes. Thank you, my sister. So and as I always say, these people stay at the drawing board. They stay at the drawing board, yeah. family.
Mm-hmm.
It's time for us to be at the board. Yeah. They stay at the drawing board on us. It's always something. And we have to know.
Right.
This is still the same game, but it's just under new names.
That's
and
right.
it's a different name.
That's
but
right.
it's still the same game. History
That's
repeating
right.
itself.
Right.
And our children, if we don't tell them and school them, they ain't going to even know what hit them.
That's right.
And television. That's just right. look that up. Television.
Yep.
What does that mean? We must learn wordings also. That's very important, too.
Right.
But these jokers stay at the drawing board on us, family.
That's right.
We get a board.
You know,
Brother Griffin, you wanted to say something really quickly?
I just want to say something quickly. I hear everybody talking, but I'm going to tell you something. As an old school brother, 67, a lot of this stuff begins at home. I'm going to tell you something quickly. I told you My son is 40 years younger than I am. I literally walked into a grocery store one time in Dallas, Texas, and I heard the scream, and I knew the child was mine. I walked to the back of the store, and I see his mother arguing with him because he wants to get a blueberry, get some pancakes that had blueberries on them. So the reason I say this to you is the idea of imagery just being with television alone, guess what? That's where he learned that, on television. Mm-hmm. That picture had to be what the contents was. So literally had to walk over to a woman I loved that bore my child and explain to her, leave him right where he is in the basket and you go about your business. So I look my child in the eye and I say to him, stop it. So he stopped screaming. Okay. And I said, now he's about 3 years old now, and she's got him sitting in the thing to control him. And I said, number one, you're up here like you're a baby. Let me take you out of there. I literally took him out, stood him on the ground, made him look me in the eye. I said, didn't I tell you that pictures don't mean what's inside? He says, yes. I said, so because you don't trust your mother enough that you're in here acting a fool. I said, so let me do you a favor. I ripped the thing open, it's frozen food. I said, show me the blueberries. He said, there are none. I said, and if I ever see you disrespect your mother like that again, you won't have any blueberries in you either. So I'm literally telling you, you have to teach your child the difference between watching something for entertainment and accepting imagery for what it is. And I start out by making them pay attention to the things that show the cryon shows on commercials when they're talking about drugs.
Right.
Only country that allows you to advertise to people. But I tell kids, read what's going across there. Then now they've gotten to the point to even do the disclaimer. I say, now the people are telling you, you need to roll the dice to solve this medical condition, but here are 25 other things that might happen to you. And
that's
they
right.
call that freedom. In other words, that's how you have to start kids out. I'll stop there. Y'all get what I'm saying.
Okay.
You've got to start them at the beginning.
We have one caller that just popped on from South Carolina. Caller, did you want to say something or you just
Yes, Dr. Jeffries, I went with you in 2005 to Ghana, Panafest.
You got an echo in the background. Do you have something else on, like a radio or a computer?
Yes, I just turned it off.
Okay, all right, now you can go right ahead. Uh-huh.
I am Christine Jones, and I went with you on Panafest 2005. Mm-hmm. That was my first trip abroad. And I'm trying to just reconnect because that trip was one of a lifetime adventure for me because it was one that I really couldn't afford, but I just made a way to make it happen. And so I have never forgotten it. So
all right.
So I'm calling because I have talked with some people in my community about that trip. I did that several years ago also, but recently I've been talking about it. And they want to know when is the next trip to Ghana for the Panel Fair.
Mm-hmm. Does anybody know on our platform? Sister Benisa?
First, am I hearing it?
No, I don't.
Okay.
No.
Does anybody know?
I will say that there are lots of people going, making trips to Africa now, so I think it's really easy to find that out. There are people who go regularly, Professor Small, just so many.
Right, yeah, there are some other trips.
Noka Rashidi's going in the next couple of months, so it'll be easy enough to find out.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the information that I need because I talked with my brother about it, and I told my brother about my trip that I made with Dr. Jeffries and Dr. Small and living here in South Carolina, how I had the need to go and see where I came from and the steps that I took to make that trip.
Oh, wow.
And so I was retracing those steps to give my brother and other people information about my journey there.
Where's Lawrence, South Carolina? Where's that? What provides
Lawrence, South Carolina. Columbia, South Carolina is the capital of Lawrence.
Okay.
And I'm about 65 miles east
of Columbia, South Carolina.
Okay, so you're going near the ocean, right?
No. I'm not going toward Myrtle Beach. I'm going more inland toward Greenville, South Carolina.
Gotcha. I was just wondering if you were close to those rice islands. Let me do this real quickly, because I want Brother Timothy to mention that thing that he's talking about. To all of our internet audience, we are going off the air. You can call on the telephone and at 215-490-9832.
Let me get my pen to write that.
Okay.
The number down.
Right.
Let me get that first.
The internet's going to turn off in just a second. And so what we'd like to do is, if you're listening, if you're on internet, you can call and listen on the air right now, because we are going to go over a little bit. It's 215-490.
Wait a minute. Okay. I got the pen.
Well, you're calling. The number you just called is the one that we're on, and I'm talking to those that were on internet. And matter of fact, we're off now, so we can go back there. It ends right at 8 o'clock.
Well, I just need that number again.
Okay, you called it. You had to call it to come on now.
I did not call it. I just went online searching for Leonard Jeffrey, 2021. So I did not call that line.
Okay.
Dr. Rogers?
Go right ahead.
Yeah. I think there's a little confusion going on. You might want to talk to her a little afterward.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's a little confusion.
I think there's a little confusion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when she came on, she called you Dr. Jeffrey.
Right.
Okay. That's an honor. But okay.
Yes, no secret.
Exactly. Okay, let me go. Brother Timothy, Henry Louis Gates, what's your problem with Gates?
Well, Dr. Rogers, you know, when people think about blues, their go-to man a lot is B.B. King. I go further than that. You know, I do Sonny Terry, Robert Johnson, Brownie McGee, Howlin' Wolf, okay? So I think that America wants Skip Gates to be the go-to man for history. Well, the people that I know who really need to know about this is your program. And the brothers and sisters that come on your program. And people like Dr. Jeffries, Dr. Clark, Wade Nobles, James Smalls. You have people that can give you the history that you know, that you need to know. Skip Gates is marketed by Harvard University.
Yeah.
And his marketing program is to give you just a surface of history. If you ever look, he's not interviewing people in the United States of America that are black, people of color. He goes to stars.
Well, he just did the Black Church. Did you see that?
Yeah, Dr. Rogers. He did something on the Black Church. Some of it was good. But when he got to the Islamic part, he interviewed a brother from over the East. I said he had the Nation of Islam.
Right.
He couldn't grab nobody from the Nation to talk about the Nation. So I'm saying that we have to look out to who they want us to point to for our information.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to say that about Skip, that Skip Gates, to me, is very shallow. He does some things. He doesn't. He's not around our people.
Mm-hmm.
He's their man to go to. And you think you need to go to him for history.
Right.
There are other people. I'm not saying to not count him out, but there are other people that will give us the diameter and circumference of our knowledge about black men.
Dr. Bridges, did you see Skip Gates' piece on the Black Church? Dr. Bridges, your phone is probably mute if you're trying to find it. Dr. Bridges? Okay. Alrighty. Anybody see the Black Church?
Nope, I didn't.
I
saw the Black Church, and
what did you think
of
it? What was your comment? What were your thoughts?
Well, it was the Black Church in the past.
Okay.
And back in the past, they really had a desire to help black folk and to bring black folk up to the future.
Mm.
But that's not the church I'm seeing right now.
No, you're right. What's the one you see there? What do you think? What are we looking at now when we look at the black church?
What I'm looking at right now, the black church is all about
money.
A family that is about the money, and they're keeping it all in their family. That's okay. What I see with the black church now.
Okay.
They are keeping it, children, grandchildren, and their legacy. And you are supposed to support their legacy and disregard your legacy.
Right. Okay.
That's what I'm seeing in the black church right now.
All right. Anybody else thought on that?
Hey, Dr. Rogers, you guys hear me okay?
Go right ahead.
Yes. Well, I also watched the black church, and it destroyed me a number of different ways. I actually I quit going. I was doing security at one of the churches here in the city of Milwaukee. There, he's a former police lieutenant. He retired, and they had a movie called Red Arrow Park. And he was in that movie, and that was with the Dontre Hamilton situation.
Yeah, I saw that.
And he was the officer that talked about the Officer Manning.
Right.
And he said a lot of positive things about Officer Manning, and then how people can misinterpret things, not being a police officer, things of that nature. And what I noticed about him for the years that he's been there, and I've been at that church probably for almost 20 years, he's never said anything bad about what the police have done to the people in the community as far as use of force and abuse, things of that nature. But what he has done, he has talked about the citizens being bad and that, you know, they need to change, they need to this. He puts it all on them. And I understand why he does that, because you know, he's like Oprah in their good graces. You know, he's being obedient to his master, who is, you know, the white man. And that bothers me deeply. And that's what these churches are doing, because they've taken money away from them in the 60s, and they had to change their efforts. I mean, you're not going to find these churches supporting Black Lives Matter and things of that nature. They're not going to do that, or they're going to lose funding.
Right.
Or they're going to get shut down some kind of way. And so churches used to be a place where we could come, gather up, get some ammunition, talk about what we're going to do. And they've changed where we go now. And now we can't trust each other. And that was the same thing, I did a show a while back called Plantation Fever. And that's that mentality on the plantation, you know, where you want to run away, but if you run away, the master already let everybody know. If somebody runs away, they're talking about running away, and you don't say anything, everybody's going to get punished, and they're going to get punished bad.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why Harriet carried a gun, because you got people that, you know, they want to get away from the abuse, but they're afraid. They are psychologically damaged, but then there are those that are feel that they're better off than the field Negro versus the house Negro.
Okay.
And so they're not going to trade that position in. And that's where I think a lot of these churches are, based on what they don't do and how they're not standing up for people, because they're never going to tell. And they've always used the churches for us to go to in that direction, because churches never talk about fighting back. You know, with exception of when we were on the Deacons for Defense.
Right.
Outside of that was the last time.
Yeah.
They want to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Well, we are planning to do a big broadcast on the black church and where it is today and where it was. But we're going to do it from a different perspective than obviously what Gates was doing. That'll be on one of our programs coming up. We're going to put both lay and clergy, as well as those that are in who will critique the church as hard, because we need to talk about it. We need to talk about it.
The sister
from South Carolina said very clearly, the old black church was different. You know, that was the whole mentality to churching and what churching was, and that's gone now, isn't it? Obviously, the Potter House is not trying to do any of that stuff. You know, so we want to talk about that. But listen, we went over a little bit so we could talk. I wanted Brother Timothy to just stress what his point was about Gates. Thank you so much. We're going to do more of this. This is what we call our coffee shop talk that we do. We open up the lines and just deal with whatever. And you have definitely done some wonderful analysis in terms of a lot of the imagery and films and television programs that are out there attempting to try to capture our attention using the COVID-19 as a way to do that. So I appreciate you.
Dr. Rod.
Go right ahead.
Well,
yeah, I don't want to be the last one to say anything because I know you got to close out, but I have to say this if you don't mind. Brother Marcus, when he said that he started getting angry, feeling angry, and he was talking about pain being a motivator, was absolutely on point. It is pain that will move us, nothing else,
right.
Nothing else.
Right.
And we made a mistake, and we should correct ourselves. We should never ask another black person. I'm saying we because I did it too. Ask another black person to not be angry. That's what whites want. That's what the oppressors
right.
don't that's want right. us. Right. Don't let the Negroes be angry because they're afraid of what we're going to do. And so what we do is repress all that anger, and then we act it out on each other.
Yeah.
So we support Brother Marcus and his anger, because I'm angry too all the time. I don't know how to come back from it. I don't stay there. And I'm sure most of us adults know how to come back from our angry. But
oh, yeah.
We never tell a black man, especially, not to be angry, because he has the right to be angry 24/7.
That's right. That's right. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, friends. We will be
let me say this. This is South Carolina again, because I think I kind of stumbled in on this because I was looking for the information about going back to Ghana to the Panda Fest. So I kind of stumbled in on this. So I just want to make sure I got the right number to call in, because I think you are talking about some things that I am interested in.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. And
very good.
I just want to make sure I got that information and that telephone again and find out your schedule for talking.
Okay, fantastic. Let me give you that right now. It's area code 215.
Okay.
490.
Shoot, you know this pen gonna stop writing. Wait a minute.
Okay.
Pen is gonna stop writing. And let me get some paper. Okay. 215. Okay?
215 is the area code.
Yeah.
490.
490.
9832.
32.
9832. That's correct. And
okay.
We are on every Tuesday evening from 7 to 9 Central Time, 8 to 10 Eastern Time. And we are also on Thursdays from 6 to 8 Central Time, 7 to 9 Eastern Time.
Okay, the time I'm on now is Central Time,
yeah.
And it's 9 o'clock here where I live.
Okay, well that's
and,
right.
And you've been,
well,
you,
no, it's
you've been on since
you're on
you've
Eastern
been on
time,
since 7
yeah.
o'clock.
Right, so you're on Eastern
yeah.
time. We came on actually, yeah. So yeah, with your time, it'll be 7 to 9 on Thursday, and 8 to 10 on Tuesday.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much, brothers and sisters. We'll be back with you next week. Have a wonderful and safe week, and we appreciate you and all the things that you you did for us here tonight. This has been a wonderful discussion. And so, again, we will see you next week.
Thank you so much, Dr.
Rogers. Thank you, Dr. Rogers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
No changes. Wake up in the morning and I ask myself, is life worth living? Should I blast myself? I'm
gotta be a point, even worse, I'm black. My stomach hurts, so I'm looking for a purse to snatch. Cops give a damn about a Negro. Pull a trigger, killin', he's a hero. Get a to the kids who the hell cares. One less hungry mouth on the welfare. First ship him, don't let him deal with brothers. Give him guns, step back, watch them kill each other. It's time to fight back, that's what Huey said. Two shots in the dark, now Huey's dead. I got love for my brother, but we can never go nowhere unless we share with each other. We gotta start making changes. Learn to see me as a brother instead of two distant strangers. And that's how it's supposed to be. How can the devil take a brother if he's close to me? I let it go back to when we played as kids, but then it changed. That's the way it is.